Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm here with Tracy Mills, and delighted to have Mrs. Woog as our guest.
Thank you for having me.
Mrs. Woog, you've written a new book. It's extraordinarily funny book. Now, it's called Primary School Confidential, and who are you reaching? Who are you writing out there for? Is it an extension of your extraordinarily successful Woog's World blog?
It's not an extension of the blog. It's a collection of stories that I have written from my own experiences. It's sort of into three parts. The first part is about my time as a primary school student and, you know, going back and visiting lots of funny things that happened to me. The second part was about the time that I was a primary school teacher and I taught in the country, New South Wales, and then over in London. And then the third part is about my time as a primary school parent. And one of the interesting things that I realised as I was writing the book was that not much has changed in the modern primary school. I mean, a lot of technology has changed and all the rest of it, but essentially there are still the things that happen in a primary school that used to happen, you know, back when we were all at school.
So in a sense, there's still humans turning up at these places, no matter how technologically advanced it gets. We're just the same idiots we were before.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right, I'm with you. I just want to touch on a few things, a little background on who you are. I mean, you've got a massive fan base for your blog, but I'd like to, you know, the book world is another world to conquer. So I want to give a bit of introduction on how you came into being as Mrs.
Okay,
Woog.
Sure. About 6-7 years ago, I was at home with two small kids. I'd quit my job. I worked in publishing of all places, and I quit my job. I always loved writing. I quit my job. My second son was born deaf, so I really wanted to get him up and running and get him into school in a normal mainstream school with really age-appropriate language. So I quit my job and did that for 5 years, but during those 5 years I started going a bit mental because being at home with two small kids sometimes can do that to a gal, and I was just really lonely and bored, and the internet was sort of coming of age and social media was sort of just starting out, and someone said to me, you should write a blog. And I went, yeah, I'll do that. And so I wrote one blog post in the first year and I wrote three in the second year. And then I watched that movie, Julie and Julia, where she had vowed to cook through the Julia Child's cookbook. And I thought, I'll do that with my blog and I'll just blog every day for a year and just see. You know, I set a little personal challenge. Stop me talking to the Hare Krishnas at the door and things like that. And then it just sort of took off. I didn't plan for it. I didn't know what a blog really was, and social media was sort of interesting to me, and it was an incidental success.
Incidental. Do you class the success around how honest you were or your situation, that you were at home with the kids and other readers found solace or humour in there?
I think the tagline of the blog is making the most of the mundane, and I think that really resonated with my audience because everyone was doing the same sort of thing, and then everyone was putting on this lovely polished performance that they were this amazing mum, and there weren't any mums that were sort of saying, actually I'm finding this really boring and this is a bit shit and all I want to do is go and have a tequila slammer. And you know, that's happened to me too, and that's probably the thing that I get more than anything from feedback from the readers, is it's like you're living in my head. And I really like that, you know, because it makes you feel like less alone.
And what sort of parameters did you give yourself on the blog as to this is as far as I'm willing to go, no further, or did you just go, no, I'm just going to open it all up?
I just think you're only here for a short time, and I'm pretty open. There's nothing much I won't touch on.
That's one of the things I loved about the book. I was reading this at the hairdresser's on Saturday and sharing anecdotes
with
the hairdresser, and she's of a similar age.
Yeah.
And like remembering all the things you'd forgotten about, all the crazes you went through as a kid, like, you know, the bangles and the smurf that you used to get from the petrol station. And I'm remembering like all those little things that were so important at that age that, you know, you think back now and think, oh God, why was I so into that and so obsessed?
I know, and the strawberry short and Ramona Alvarez. I got this Cabbage Patch Kid and I felt so ripped off because it had red hair and its name was Ramona Alvarez. It wasn't quite Stephanie Elizabeth with blonde hair. I got the redhead one.
And it's so funny seeing kids now because all those crazes are coming back.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have kids myself, but my niece is obsessed with strawberry shortcake. And, you know, we bought her the Cabbage Patch Kid. But it doesn't seem to have the same sort of impact now as it did when we were kids. It's like it was everyone was obsessed about it.
Because we're grown-ups now.
Yeah, but I think too maybe this... The kids aren't as they're not obsessed on one thing.
I think maybe because there's too much on offer.
Yeah. You know,
back then when there wasn't that much to offer. There was one sort of two different types of Barbies and that was it.
Mm.
So yeah. I think we were sort of probably happier because there wasn't the choice. Maybe.
We find that with music now and with movies, with TV. We're not all watching the TV show at the same time, so you can't come and talk about it at the same time. That's a big difference between the generations.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, it's that collective experience, I think, and that's what resonated so much with me with reading this book, and I think why it was just so, so hilarious. I think people were looking at me as if I was nuts because I'm just, bawling my eyes out.
Oh, that's great. I try to see humour in most everything because I love laughing and I love to make people laugh, and, you know, that to me is my favourite. People say, what do you like to do? I said, laugh. It's my favourite thing in the world to do. And to make someone else laugh is just lovely.
I know that for years I was trying to write and writing all this nonsense stuff, and it was when I got to have to write blogs and had an instant reaction to whether something worked or something didn't work, I felt almost in a class, a live classroom on how to write. Did you feel that when you started to write the blog, that you were honing your writing as well by audience?
I can see now when I look back, you know, if I go back a couple of years, you can actually sort of see how the writing improved over the time. Writing's obviously, you know, it's like your tongue, it's a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it gets. So your voice actually becomes more apparent the more often you do it. So I can see how it did get stronger. And then when, you know, you are sort of having those interactions, you get more confident with your words and how you get them out there. So it's just a practice thing, I think.
Because then it's a big leap. To go from blog to book.
Yeah. And actually, I sort of stumbled at the beginning because I wasn't used to writing in long form and I wasn't used to not doing anything when I'd finished with it. So how I worked it was I wrote it like a blog. So I would write a chapter, and the chapter might be 2,000 words, around that mark. And then instead of hitting publish on a WordPress platform, I sent it to my editor. Because it felt weird to have it sit there and not go out somewhere. Like, it's really difficult to explain. I sound like a lunatic. But to me, that process of putting that book together, that's the way that it worked best for me.
And when you start to consider your past, I mean, many people who have come in here talking about memoir writing in any form have found it quite life-changing. Did you feel that there was...
No, it wasn't life. It was exhausting. It was exhausting. And... You know, one of the things I did was I went through boxes and boxes of old stuff. Mum had recently given me, like, all my old school reports and all of that sort of stuff, books and stuff, photos. So I was just sort of going through all of these memories and dredging up memories and thinking, yes, I remember being in the Christmas nativity scene as, you know, not getting the part that I wanted. It was very upsetting to me at the time. So it was quite exhausting because you had to sort of recall everything and even little details that I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, but I can remember what school shoes I wore back in 1970, whatever it was. It's, it was exhausting, but so fun.
It's hilarious. I mean, I love the anecdotes of, like, getting your first bra and
going
through all those Right.
But everybody's done it. Everyone has done it.
There's a sense that when you have kids in the house, that some of the things that you were so exhausted and so happy were gone. Some of the rituals of childhood that turn up again and again and again. And so you get, as an adult, you go, yes, I'm out, I'm free. And then you return. You come back to them and you're standing beside the sports field going, I hated this the first time around. What am I doing here? Again, I don't want to be here. But is it when you talk about that final sort of return, and you're looking at the school through three different perspectives, is there anything that you can offer those of us who are standing on the side of the field? Any advice or solace, or is it just laugh? You just got to laugh at this stuff. You can't.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to change what's actually going to happen. So yeah, just. Laugh. Everyone's the same. Like, we're all the same. All the mums who are in the classrooms, in the playgrounds, picking up their kids, they all think the other mums are talking about them. They're not talking about you. They're not talking about you. They're talking about what they're going to cook for dinner or something else that's really exciting. But, yeah, there's a lot of angst as a mother going into primary school in particular, because in a lot of ways I think it brings back that feeling of, do I belong here? You know, when you're first starting school and you're trying to find your tribe, and it's the same thing when you're a parent and you go back into the school, especially if you're starting in a new school, because I started, we had to move schools, and I was just terrified of the mums in the playground, but I knew that I had to make friends with them, because you have to have, mums have to have friends with other mums or dads in the playground, because it's just someone to ring to say, "Is when's Harmony Day?" Which apparently was today, but I didn't get the note. Oh, sorry, I just kicked the microphone. Yeah, can't remember what I was going to say.
That's the beauty of podcasts. You can go anywhere you like. We can talk about anything if you like. Yeah.
Do you find much... I read the sections on teaching and particular experiences teaching in London, which sounded like a very difficult job to undertake with such a diversity of children.
Yeah.
What was your favourite thing about that experience? Like...
Yeah, so the experience we're talking about is I was teaching at a school in Hackney, and it was a very low socioeconomic area, and it was a very diverse area, so we had loads of different cultures represented in my little class, my huge big class. And even in between those, we had kids with disabilities, we had kids with learning difficulties, we had Leonard, who had snot problems. And adenoid problems. You haven't read about Leonard.
No, I haven't yet. No.
Read about Leonard. And I had to have these kids for a year to get them through an Ofsted, which is a government inspection. And I had nothing to work with. I had no resources. I had like very little. And that was probably, it was such a tough year, but we got them through it, and the kids had changed. And teaching is such an important thing, because like, if you can, you remember your favourite teacher, they stay with you forever. Yeah. And those kids had had, I think, three or four different teachers to start, and the teachers kept leaving. So I decided I would stay and get them through that. So that was pretty rewarding. And then I was exhausted and decided to get out of teaching.
After all that highfalutin talk, you just go, I'm out.
That's amazing. That's so amazing. Get me out of here. It was exhausting. And I remember... I was walking on the last day, I was walking up to the high street to get the bus, and this big black Mercedes pulled up next to me, and the window went down. It was one of my little kids in my class, and she's like, "You want a lift, love? Don't you want a lift, miss?" And I was like, "No, thank you," because like her dad was the local drug dealer, and that's why they were in the black Mercedes, and I was working to get your kid through this thing, and I am walking to the bus. And that was an injustice. I think it was dreadfully unfair.
Well, thank you very much for joining us at the Booktopia podcast. We've been talking about Primary School Confidential by Mrs. Wu, and you can get your copy on booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.